for me, my grandfather on my mom's side was a Mason, and on my grandmother's side, her father was a Mason. So my great-grandfather was a Mason, and my grandfather on my mom's side, and my father, and several uncles, my brother, brother-in-laws, were all Masons. So when I got into the Masonic fraternity, I was 30 years old, and of course, then my family from around Lima and Allen County over there, then they traveled over here as I got my degrees, because you have 3 degrees that you go through when you become a Mason. So anyway, they came over, and of course, you know, they thought everybody here, you know, that was, they were just good people and great, so they were happy, and my dad was happy, and my grandfather had already passed away, but so I joined it, and you know, I just thought everything that they do is really, it didn't change anything I did, because I believe in the golden rule. I believe in helping your fellow man. It didn't change my business. I didn't look at it as it was going to advance me financially, or it was going to advance me, you know, in business or anything like that. But it was just a group of guys that, you know, somebody that's 80 years old can have something in common with a 21-year-old. So you take the generational difference, and masonry binds, because if you're a Mason, you have something in common. But I think if you go back, and maybe we talked about this, the history of fraternities, of helping your fellow man. Odd fellows are called odd fellows because people in England thought it was odd that somebody would take their money, their hard-earned money, and give it to their fellow man. So that was odd. That was strange. So there were odd fellows. But, and there's more to it than that. But if you look at collegiate, I think they did some investigating, and I can't tell you which college it was, on fraternities and what happened to them. Well, if you go back into the early 1960s, and they started, I think 1964 was when they, Congress signed welfare into being, you know. So when they did that, fraternal organizations like the Masons and the Odd Fellows, they took care of the widows and the orphans. They helped get them educated, you know, provide food, shelter, and bury the dead. And if you think about it, back in the 1800s, when there were so many immigrants coming to the United States, people would come here by themselves. They had no family. Well, they would go around and get odd jobs all, you know, wherever, and they might find them dead somewhere. Well, who was going to bury them? So, you know, that's when townships had paupers areas where they would put people that didn't have anything. And it wasn't always called paupers. That's not a good term to use. Indigents, indigent burials. But I think in 64 when welfare started, and the study goes, that's when the government kind of stepped in and said, okay, you know, we're going to provide you housing. We're going to provide food. We're going to provide medication. We're going to provide all these things. Well, that was what a lot of these fraternal organizations did. So I think that was kind of the beginning of the end. Because if you look at the numbers of Masons in Ohio, in the 60s, in the early 60s, that was about the peak. And then you see after that, the numbers start dropping down. So, you know, it's amazing. And the Masons are still very charitable. The Masons worldwide give over $2 million a day away. So, you know, that's pretty nice. Here locally, we, all the widows of the Masons that belong to our lodge, all the widows, we give them a gift card at Christmas time. We try to reach out and connect with them. Our brother Masons that are in nursing homes, we suspend their dues. They're still Masons. We don't make them pay dues. You know, we get them if they need anything. We do honor flight. We try to get the veterans taken care of. We do Special Olympics. We try to help out there. I think, I can't tell you the money right offhand, but it's been a lot of money over the years that they've done for Special Olympics. So you're you belong to an organization that's trying to help, you know, their fellow man. But the government stepped in and taken a big part of that role away. I think the move was, some people, it was okay with it, but I think some of the other Masons they really didn't want to move into, they want to have their own, you know, switch. That was some of the older Masons. But you have to remember, too, that the average age of a Mason today is probably around 70 years old. I mean, this is not a young man's fraternity. So, if we get a 40-year-old coming in, he's a youngster. So, but anyway, I think, you know, it's hard for change, especially, I think, as you get older. But the move over here went smooth, but it wasn't completely accepted by 100% of the, but, you know, everybody melded into it, and it was fine. It really was. You know, this was the Odd Fellows Lodge. It wasn't the Masonic Lodge, where that was designated as a Masonic, you know, and set up that way. Because just the layout of the lodge, this is not Masonic. This is Odd Fellow. So where the master sits and where the senior warden sits, you know, the master's supposed to sit in the east. Well, that's not east, you know. So if you think about it, the other lodge was set up properly for the Masons. This isn't. But, you know, it's symbolic, if that makes sense. So, you know, whether it's real reality or it's symbolic. So, and you have to remember, too, that back in the day, back before there were even automobiles, men used to get in their buggies and hitch up the horse, and they would ride into town and go to the lodge meeting. And, you know, they would come up and do that, and then they'd go back down, get on their horse, and go home. But it was, you know, they didn't have television. They didn't have entertainment things like we have today. So, but, yeah, I think the numbers just, you know, what dictates the numbers is just the fact we can't get younger members involved. And I don't. You know, they've tried to do things electronically. They've tried to go to different, just try different things to get the younger people involved. But you have to remember that as a Mason or an Odd Fellow, it's not about me. It's about everybody else. You know, you're trying to help other people, help others. It's nothing for you. I mean, there's nothing, you know, prestigious about being a Mason, other than I want to be a just and upright person. You know, I want to treat my fellow man right, and you know, try to help all I can help. Come over here to this lodge, and I think, you know, if you were in here and there's 18 guys in here and they're eating pizza or they have chili or, you know, whatever, and some of the best meetings are right here in the dining hall. You know, we go in there and it's all cut and dried. I mean, you know, we have certain procedures you go through, and you read minutes and you approve them, and you know, expenditures, and you go through all the meeting stuff. Here is where we have the good meetings, and we discuss some of the things. You know, I talk to so and so, and somebody's in the hospital or somebody needs help. You know, they're struggling, or you know, there's a family over here that just lost somebody, and you know, what can we do? Or you know what I mean? And then you take that in there, and then you make it official. You know, we're going to spend money to help with this, or we're going to do that. Or, you know, there's ways that we make money. We raffle long guns off. A group of us went down to the Columbus, Franklin County Fairgrounds, in that where the Ohio State Fair is. And we did guard duty, overnight guard duty for the big Meeting of the Green, which was a John Deere tractor, big, huge. People from all over the country and the world came there. But I went down there with another brother, Mason. We rode a golf cart all night and protected, you know. Of course, State Highway Patrol's in there. But, you know, then we had a check writ to us, and then we turn around and divvy it out. You know, we help. But doing things like that, if you tell a younger person, hey, this is what we do, you don't really get a big, hey, that's what I want to do, you know. And then as the guys get older, they can't do that. You know, I'm still young enough, I could go down there and do that. But yes, I think it's just trying to keep people involved. But bringing people in from around, you know, thank goodness they come here and they want to keep coming back. because for every person that drops out, it's, if you're not replacing them, you know, and that's where we're at. You just see the numbers dwindle. And sorry to say, but that's the way it is. You try to be helpful to your community because you want it to stay. You want it to be whole. And here again, I think with the older guys kind of cement that in, and the younger guys coming up, you know, we kind of see the direction that they went before. But with everything changing, it's hard to maintain that. You know, we had a car show a few years ago. That went really well. We're going to have another one. You know, but I think you try to do things that will involve the community. And you want the community to know that there's a group of people here in this fraternity that care about the community, and we want to see it whole. We want to see it stay that way. But we're getting frustrated, too, because it's getting harder. You just don't know sometimes what direction to go to try to keep it whole, if that makes any sense. And I think the fraternal organizations probably played a greater role in the 70s and the 60s and the 50s because of the way the world was back then. It just seemed to be more, I guess I don't know how to put that. It's like the Ozzy and Harriet. You know what I mean? Like that 50s, 60s, wholesome, you know, American, I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. But, I mean, I wanted to be a part of it because I had family history with it. And all the men that are in the Masons with me, I respect them all. Now, do we have flaws? Oh, yeah. Any group of people is going to have flaws. But I think the vast majority of them are trying to look out for the community and for their fellow man. Which, hey, I don't have a problem with being a part of that. I really don't. But I worry about Caledonia. I truly do. And I think just for the things that you and I were talking about, just like trying to get this historic district going, and you kind of go gung-ho, and then, you know, you think the wind comes out of the balloon. But I think it's going to be hard to keep everything whole for a long period of time. Buildings get older. It's just a breakdown of society, I guess. And I'm not being negative. I'm just saying that has kind of carved our direction on where we're going to go. And I don't know what, you know, I'm as frustrated as the next guy. We talk about this at every meeting. How are we going? What are we going to do? And what are we going to do to get people involved here that we're still here in 20 years, 50 years? You know, they didn't used to worry about that. Now we do, because the numbers are dwindling. When I got into Masonry, there were 18 lodges in our district. Now there are 11, probably soon to be 10. So it's almost fallen in half in 30 years. So, but I don't, you know, are we trying to relive the past? You know, are we trying to, you know, we're trying to step forward into the future or try to direct something for the future, but I think we're still trying to hold on to the past, and the past has changed and it's gone, if that makes sense. And I'm not being negative, I'm trying to be positive about it, but, you know, we're as frustrated as anybody. And I think what we do is good, and you tell people that, and they're like, man, this is great. And then you say, hey, you know, we meet up here first and third Mondays of every month. You know, what do you think? Oh, yeah, I might like to do that. Well, then, you're just kind of putting the bait out there and saying, hey, you know, if you're really interested, come out and see what we do. And you don't get a real good response. You know, I'd rather have quality than quantity anytime. But at some point, if you don't have enough quantity, all the quality in the world doesn't make any difference. So, yeah, it's frustrating. But I don't think anybody knows what the answer is. And it's a busy world. And you come into one of our lodge meetings, it's probably boring. Because we go in there, a bunch of old fogies, and, you know, we laugh about stupid stuff, maybe, you know, I mean, to a younger person. And I know when I first came in the lodge, I was 30 years old. My hair was black, you know. I wore a suit and tie like everybody else. But I love to sit around and listen to the old-timers tell me the stories, you know, about it. And so anyway, yeah. And as far as being proud to be a Mason, if you look at 13 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Masons. You know, look at George Washington. You look at Ben Franklin, Paul Revere. I mean, you start looking at these figures, and they were all Masons. And there was a reason that, you know, some of these things happened in the Revolutionary War. Because the Masons can keep a secret, you know, and they have a code. So I think that really had a lot to do with, you know, our Revolutionary War and the success of it. I truly do. But it's good to be in company with somebody like that. But I think the role of the lodges in this town was very high probably in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I think you could just kind of see things changing in the 70s. And I think it's kind of been on the downward slide ever since. But I can't stick my finger on exactly what the catalyst was to create that. You know, I think a lot of it was maybe economic. But there again, to go back to what I said about the government, the college that did the study on that said, the government is taking the place of fraternal organizations that used to help all these people. Now it's just the need's not there, you know, like it was.